right. You're listening to Saturdays with Siri. We'll be right back with more here on Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130. Welcome back to Saturdays with Siri. I'm joined here by attorney Jeff O'Brien from Lohmann Abdo, who represents many craft breweries here in the state of Minnesota. If you have a comment or question, you can give us a call at 651-989-5855. That's 651-989-5855. Okay, Jeff, we were talking a little history of the breweries here in Minnesota. Turns out there used to be well over 200 that were functioning. So I was under the impression that craft breweries are something that is kind of a new phenomenon, but in fact is not the case.
The craft tag is new.
Sure.
You know, there's a difference between what, you know, Minnesota had a lot of breweries, but a lot of them produced what, you know, everybody knows now as, you know, kind of the American lager, like the real light pale beers that a lot of us craft fans consider, you know, one step away from
like
water.
Yeah, exactly.
exactly. So the types of beers are different. But in terms of the brewing tradition, yes, there's always been breweries here.
All right. And that was prior to Prohibition. And then after Prohibition, we finally are starting to pick up again. We're getting more breweries opening up. But what's not changed, even though we're in a new day and new age, is a lot of the laws that have kind of legislated and regulated these breweries. It seems to me that they are really kind of against small breweries.
It was a different paradigm when these laws were enacted. Like you mentioned, the distribution law came about 1977. Summit came about 1986. You know, this was a decade before the craft beer movement started. And it was always we had already gone through the big breweries buying up all these little breweries that were still around into the 50s and 60s, the big breweries buying them. You know, Grain Belt brand, which Shell's now had brought back and still makes manufacturers to this day. Grain Belt bounced around. Grain Belt, you know, the original brewery was called Orth Brewing, and then it became Minneapolis Brewing Company, and then it became Grain Belt, and then Grain Belt sold off to Heilemann, and then when Minnesota Brewing came out, you know, a couple of decades ago, they bought the recipe back from Heilemann, and then when they closed, that's when Shell's got it. So the Grain Belt name has been around forever, but it's been in the hands of a lot of different people.
All right. And one of the biggest frustrations that people have, because there's the legal side of it that the breweries are dealing with, the legal side of it that we have to deal with is, of course, the ban on Sunday liquor sales.
Yep.
So how does this affect craft breweries? What is their opinion or stance on it?
Well, the breweries, up until recently, the breweries didn't necessarily take a stand on the Sunday sales, because the folks that are on the other side that are opposing it, primarily a group called the Minnesota Licensed Beverage Association, which is representing the interests of bars, restaurant owners, and the quote unquote mom and pop liquor stores.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, a lot of the breweries sell through them. You know, they need to have they have to go through a distributor, of course, but ultimately they want to have the liquor stores being willing to, and the bars and restaurants being able to be willing to stock and sell their product.
Mm-hmm.
So making enemies of the folks that are on the other side of this was not what they were looking to do. There were about half dozen or so bills introduced this session, bipartisan, to repeal the ban. Everything from a full repeal to kicking it down to the cities and letting them decide, to this very limited bill, which actually the Minnesota Licensed Beverage Association wrote, allowing the breweries to have the tap rooms open on Sundays and sell growlers.
And this was the one we all thought was going to pass.
We all thought this was going to pass. And it got stalled in the House Tax Committee. All of a sudden, it was moving forward. The MLBA was, of course, in favor of it. The wholesalers were sitting on the sidelines, not saying anything about it. The brewery said, hey, you know, let's take the opportunity. We like this idea because we could have an extra day where, you know, because going to a craft brewery is not just about sitting down. It's not going to a bar. You get to take a tour. There might be events. There might be live music.
Mm.
It's much more of an event. And so you can't always do that on a given weeknight. It's better to have for them to have both weekend days to be open. I mean, this is not the complaint about the liquor stores is that the overhead costs are prohibitive. They don't want to have to spend, you know, they would lose money opening on Sundays. The breweries have said, well, we wouldn't. We could actually do well here. So this bill was going forward, and it ended up in the House Tax Committee, which is chaired by Rod Scoy, who's a DFLer from the Iron Range. And and he's also a guy that he was not in favor of Sunday sales generally. And all of a sudden, the Teamsters poked their heads up because, you know, the Teamsters are, you know, they drive the trucks that the you know, for the distributors, mm-hmm. which, again, this was kind of a head scratcher because we're trying to understand the distributors don't have any role in the tap rooms or the growlers. These are exceptions to the distribution law.
Yet they seem to have so much power.
Yep. So they said an unnamed distributor told us that they can renegotiate our contracts if this passes, but they won't tell us who the distributor is, and they won't show anybody a copy of the contract. Aye. It's one of those slippery slope type things.
Right.
They do not want. They figure that if any Sunday sales is enacted, that somehow that's going to lead to a full repeal. And so at this point, barring a miracle, and the session ends, I think, later this week, Sunday sales is dead.
Yeah.
And I tell people, you know, remember in November, we got an election coming up, a midterm election. The House is up for re-election.
Mm-hmm.
If you strongly believe that you should have the right to buy your favorite beer or your favorite, you know, wine or favorite liquor at your liquor store on Sundays, ask your legislator, are you in, you know, and the majority of the Minnesotans support this.
Well, yeah. And for me, I mean, it's not so much even just the issue of liquor sales. I mean, I don't care what the product is. I just don't agree with the fact that the government can tell you when or when you should not be open.
Exactly. You know, I represent Minnesota Beer Activists, which is the nonprofit group that's leading the charge for a full repeal. And they had a great commercial on YouTube where, you know, he goes into the hardware store on Monday and he can't buy, you know, light bulbs because it's Monday, or he can't buy toilet paper on Wednesdays. It's absurd.
It is.
And, you know, and everybody kind of links this along with the car dealerships too. And the governor had said, if it hits my desk, I'll sign it.
Mm.
And they didn't get it there because it's an example of a law that was originally passed, you know, one of those blue laws because of moral concerns, that so many people make so much money having it be there, and they're going to pay a lot of money for the legislators to keep it in place.
Oh, it's a frustrating issue. And, you know, it is very discouraging that it is now dead, even though because of one group that can just stall it and stop it.
Yep. This is a fun area of law to be in, but in sometimes you just hit your head against the wall. It's so frustrating.
Oh, so what are the other issues though that these breweries are facing right now as far as like licensing and some of the things that are keeping them from really growing and spreading?
Those are the biggest ones. You know, there's some things, you know, there's a lot of issues like brew pubs can only distribute. They can sell growlers on site, and they can sell.
Can they sell growlers on Sunday?
They cannot.
So no one can.
Nope. So even though they're open, they're already open serving food and beer. They cannot fill the 64-ounce glass container that's sitting there because someone from out of town comes in and wants to try it. They can't even go. They can't sign up distribution agreements. They can't distribute beyond their own one location, and they're only allowed one location.
One of my favorites is to go over to the Free House up in Minneapolis. And again, what if I wanted to just, you know, oh, this was a really good beer, I'd love to take it home. Oh, sorry, no,
yep,
I can
come
I
back
can
tomorrow.
Serve you that same amount in separate glasses that you will drink
exactly,
but not in something you can bring home.
Right.
So what is the future? I mean, what can we do? What's the future now as we go into maybe the next legislative session?
The future is, if for those that care about this, obviously educate yourself on the issues and ask who the folks that are running, where do you stand on this? It's, you know, if legislators do things that keep them in office,
mm-hmm.
and if they know, if it comes that right now they get large campaign contributors that want to keep the ban in place, and that if they don't go along with them, they'll fund their opponent. If the public says, we're not voting for people that want to keep this ban in place,
mm-hmm.
then we'll see what happens.
What do you think the chances are of getting a major switch over in the legislature?
I don't know. I don't know if overnight it's going to happen. You know, it's bipartisan on both sides, the opponents and supporters of it. The big factor I think that's coming is, you know, this new liquor store that's opening up, Total Wine. If you've ever seen
that. Is that the one that is up in Roseville?
Yes. You have this absurd situation where the group that is supposedly for liquor store owners, the Minnesota Licensed Beverage Association, is going to each, you know, the city councils and opposing Total Wine having licenses. And you wonder why?
Because
Total Wine has defeated Sunday sales bans in other states.
Ah, isn't that interesting?
Yep. Because it's frustrating the amount of anti-competitive tactics that go on with, and I lovingly refer to some of these groups as the liquor cartel, because I don't have any other way of describing the behavior. It's like, I'm a free market guy, and like,
absolutely,
you know, let competition reign. If you're only existing because the legislature is allowing you to exist, I don't have a whole lot of sympathy for your business. I'm sorry.
Absolutely. I track with you 100% there, Jeff. Okay, so let me get my mind out of this frustrating political side of it. What are the trends that we are seeing, though, in the craft brewing industry here in Minnesota?
Well, setting aside all the specific brewery law issues, obviously for breweries, money is always an issue. And, you know, there's been a lot of changes on the federal level with in terms of how they raise money. The Securities Exchange Commission had liberalized supposedly their rules for soliciting, you know, the accredited investor, the high powered investor. But if you look at all the fine print, they really didn't. They're going to have regulations for crowdfunding later, you know, this fall. But there's going to be a lot of strings attached. Those issues are always there. The licensing parts have gotten easier. It's easier to do it online now, but there's always going to be a lot of legal issues. And if people are out there trying to start one, you know, consult an attorney.
All right. Well, and again, we can keep up with you. You do blog. You write a lot about the brewing
issues.
I do. Absolutely. So go ahead and find Jeff O'Brien. He is on Twitter. You can follow him through my post-show blog today. Thanks so much, Jeff, for joining us today
on
Saturdays with Siri. Yeah. And thank you all for listening. I hope you have a great weekend. Welcome back to the show. This week coming up, we have 10,000 minutes of Minnesota craft beer, and it's put on by the Minnesota Craft Brewers Guild. That's going to be May 5th through the 11th. If you go online, you can find a full list of the events, and they actually even have some starting today. But what this brings to mind is, of course, the ongoing debate we have related to the Sunday ban on liquor sales, and we all know how frustrating that can be to not have access to getting beer on a Sunday, but you have to go out on Saturday and you have to pick it up ahead of time. But have you ever thought about how that might impact the craft breweries here in Minnesota? Also, the trends that we're seeing with the craft breweries here in Minnesota and how our current system and laws really are hindering some of their growth and the expansion that they can have here in Minnesota, as well as affecting the economy. So in today to talk about that side of it, I have attorney Jeff O'Brien from Lohman Abdo, and he represents many craft breweries here in Minnesota. He is actually the chair of Lohman Abdo's food, beverage, and leisure law practice. Jeff, thanks so much for joining me today.
Thanks for having me, Siri.
All right. So I got to know, first of all, what a fun job. I mean, I got to say, because, you know, you obviously enjoy beer yourself.
Yep.
All right. So how did you kind of come up with this? Okay, I'm going to get into kind of the legal side of it. Was it one day I'm having a really, really great beer and it's like,
no,
I got to protect this.
it just happened. I've been practicing for close to 15 years now. And, you know, for the first 10 years, it was just the old boring business and real estate law. You know, transactional attorneys don't do all the sexy things like litigators do, you know, and all this. And I worked with a lot of, well, how it happened is I worked with a lot of new like startup businesses, and one of them happened to be an emerging brewery, and doing work with them, it just kind of parlayed. One became three became six, you know, and then us, I think we're close. I think we're over. All told, I think I'm representing over two dozen craft breweries and distilleries.
Oh, wow.
Right at the moment.
And I know that we are, let's see, I think in 2010 that we had about 24 breweries that were functioning here in Minnesota. And now that number is near doubled.
Yes. I was at a presentation a couple weeks ago. My good friend, Dan Schwartz, who's the CEO of Liftbridge Brewery, who's also the president of the Minnesota Craft Brewers Guild. And the number he threw, he said there's currently 48 operating active breweries, craft breweries in Minnesota.
And that's still growing.
It's still growing. I'm going to probably have another half dozen or so of clients of my own open this year, and an equal amount that'll probably open next year.
So, I mean, some people have said the concern that we might be getting a little saturated here. We're going to have too many craft breweries and we're not going to be able to support them all.
I've heard that. You hear it a lot when you're working with investors trying to raise money. I am one that I don't necessarily buy that. If you understand that part of working in this area, you kind of have to appreciate the history of beer and breweries in Minnesota. And we have a very rich tradition. I think it's probably because of, you know, that German heritage that we've had. You know, we have breweries dating, you know, that have been, you know, going back to the statehood. We have a very, very strong brewing culture. And I think just before Prohibition, there were over 200 breweries operating in Minnesota.
That's crazy. Yeah. Because, you know, we have we joke around that in every small town in Minnesota, you will find three things. You will find a church, a bar, and a Dairy Queen.
Yep.
But back then, it was a church, a bar, and a brewery.
Yep, absolutely. And the cool thing now, the trends I'm noticing in working with clients now, is we're seeing a return to that. It's, you know, it started out with, you know, you have Summit in St. Paul. You have Surly that was up in, you know, Brooklyn Park, Liftbridge out in Stillwater, Flat Earth in St. Paul, Fulton in Minneapolis. All, you know, those were the first ones to kind of come up. Minneapolis and St. Paul have had a good deal of breweries open in recent years. A Dangerous Man in Northeast Minneapolis, which is a client of mine. And now it's spreading out. It went to the suburbs. You know, we have Lucid out in Minnetonka. We have Excelsior. And now it's even further. I've got a client of mine, Pugs Hayes, who's got Hayes Public House out in Buffalo, right across from the lake. They're going north to Brainerd. Another client of mine is opening up Gull Dam Brewing up on Gull Lake.
Wow.
South, Jordan, Belle Plaine, Faribault, all over the place. And it's getting back to what it was before the big breweries consolidated, where every town had their own brewery. And part of that growth has been because of changes in the law.
So we're talking with Jeff O'Brien here, who is an attorney with Lohman Abdo. And if you have a question for him, you can give us a call at 651-989-5855. Let's talk about some of those changes. In the last 5 years, there have been quite a few. Can you give us a brief recap of those?
Sure. The biggest one was at the state level was the law that's called, you know, everybody knows that as the Surly Bill.
Right.
Or it's the taproom law. It allowed breweries, production breweries, packaging breweries, the breweries that, you know, make beer that goes out to restaurants and bars and liquor stores, to be able to sell, not just give samples, but sell pints of beer on the premise.
Okay.
And that was a big change, because before that, if you were a production brewery, you know, you distributed to bars and restaurants and liquor stores, or you were a brew pub, which meant you could serve on site.
All right. So what's the difference between a tap room and a brew pub?
The difference now is that a brew pub can serve, a brewery can only have, if they have a tap room, they can only serve their own beer. A brew pub can go out and get a retail, you know, a liquor license and sell other beers, hard liquor, wine. They, you know, just like a restaurant could.
Okay.
A brewery can have food in their tap room. That's actually one of these things that people don't understand sometimes about the statute, is it says they can operate a restaurant. They just can't get a retail liquor license because of the whole three-tier distribution system. And either you make it, you sell it wholesale, or you sell it retail. This tap room law was an exception to this whole, the three-tier distribution system. And that's why it became such a powerful thing. And you had a lot of folks that maybe were home brewers and said, I now can get into the market. And it's not about me selling my, you know, selling kegs to bars and restaurants or bottles to liquor stores or cans to liquor stores. Now I can subsist selling pints on site and selling growlers, which are the 64-ounce glass containers that,
yes,
that everybody liked to buy. And that just kind of, to me, that exploded it.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it's just crazy. I have to ask. I mean, these laws seem so confusing, and I don't understand the reasoning behind it.
Yep. Everything goes back to Prohibition. And of course, you know, we have this great craft beer market right now, but we also are the home of the late Congressman Andrew Volstead, i.e. the Volstead Act, which,
yes,
was what brought in Prohibition.
Mm.
And there was, back in the day, there was a concern because the big breweries had what they called tied houses. They basically had like a restaurant or saloon tied to the brewery. All they would serve would be their beers, and they would, you know, they'd have their salty foods and stuff.
Yes.
So the workers
like
would
come in.
Like
every good German loves.
Exactly.
Yes.
And they would come, and the people would come in, and of course they want to drink more beer.
Yes.
And that was the concern when they came out of Prohibition. Okay, Prohibition didn't work. Now we're going to do this, but we still don't want to have these breweries have too much power. So they came up with all these different things, and one of the hallmarks of this is what they call the three-tier distribution system.
Okay, describe that.
A brewery, once they reach a certain production level, in Minnesota it's 20,000 barrels.
Which,
okay,
recently changed
It was 25, and they brought it down to 20,000.
Okay.
And that actually came in last year, where the breweries, it used to be that you could only sell growlers up until 3,500 barrels. They wanted to go up to 20,000 barrels, so the compromise was, okay, but we're bringing the self-distribution limit down from 25,000 to 20,000, okay? So a brewery can self-distribute up until then. They can have their own trucks, their own personnel, and distribute, you know, to bars, restaurants, what have you. After that, they have to sign up with a distributor. And Minnesota's distribution law, there's a specific law for beer. And it was enacted in 1977 when there were still big breweries. This is before the craft beer revolution came about. And so it was predicated on having big breweries and small distributors. And they didn't want the big brewery bullying the small distributor to, you know, to take whatever and be able to bully them into taking their price. Okay. So Minnesota's is very different. It says you can create a distribution agreement without having a written contract. And if you want to get out of it, it's extremely difficult. It's only termination for cause as defined by the statute. Essentially, the distributor has to go out of business or do something really bad that would, you know, that would be materially...
That's outrageous.
It is. In my opinion, it is. And they also get 90 days to cure. So they have it's essentially a lifetime contract. And the thing is, I always tell my new breweries I'm working with, when the distributor comes in and wants to take a keg out to sample someplace, or whatever, or these little email exchanges, here, you know, we want to work with you. Congratulations, you've got a distributor, and you've probably got them for life.
Oh, no. And so you are mandated to get a distributor after you start to produce so much.
Once you get up to 20,000 barrels, you have to sign up with the distributor. And for these, you know, we're now seeing with the distilleries, the other outcome of the Surly bill was it dropped the license fee for distilleries down to $1,000. It used to be very expensive. And so now that's why you're seeing some of these craft distilleries pop up.
Okay.
They can't even self-distribute.
Oh.
And they tried to get it through even just being able to sell on site, like the breweries have growlers, just selling some bottles.
Yeah.
The Minnesota Licensed Beverage Association was going to hear nothing of it. They pay a lot of money in campaign contributions, and that
and
bill
this is
died,
where we're at.
That
yeah.
died in committee.
Oh. All right. We're going to hear more about where we are at on the legal side of things. Now, it does seem outrageous. If you have a comment or question that you want to contribute to the conversation, you can give us a call here, 651-989-5855. We're talking with attorney Jeff O'Brien from Lohman Abdo here on Saturdays with Siri on Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130.